The original podcast was recorded in German. This podcast was translated using artificial intelligence. Burn Rate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister.
Welcome to Burn Rate, the Venture Insider podcast with Max Meister. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Burn Rate, the Venture Capital Insider podcast. I'm here with Guy Giuffredi to talk about what's happening in the startup scene with a focus on venture capital. We're recording episode 67 tonight, Thursday, October 15th at 9 p.m. This podcast is sponsored by our partner, Upscaler.ch. Guy, what's on the agenda today?
Today's lineup includes a new partnership between cardiology startup Exploris Health and Roche, a new online game called YC Partner Simulator that teaches how Y Combinator evaluates startup pitches, and finally, a look at OpenAI's new shareholder structure after all those mega deals in recent weeks. In our main topic, we continue our mini-series on the Upscaler program with guest Peter Staley, focusing this time on success stories from the program. And of course, we have a listener question. A great one, actually. How can I convince my board that growth is still the right strategy instead of just focusing on profitability? We'll wrap up the episode, as always, with the deals of the week.
Let's start with an interesting story from the Swiss medtech scene. Exploris Health has announced a partnership with Roche. Exploris is a Basel-based digital health startup specializing in AI-powered diagnostics, specifically for the early detection of cardiovascular diseases. Their core product, Cardio Explorer, is a non-invasive blood test that uses artificial intelligence to predict whether a patient might have coronary artery blockages. In other words, whether an invasive procedure like a heart catheter is even necessary. Together with Roche, Exploris aims to accelerate clinical validation and market entry. Roche contributes its expertise in diagnostics, lab networks, and distribution, while Exploris provides the AI algorithms and medical data depth. It's a classic example of how startups are increasingly becoming innovation engines for large corporates in healthcare. Guy, when you look at such a partnership, where do you see the biggest opportunities and also the risks for a young AI startup working with a global giant like Roche?
Yeah, it's a great question. The opportunities are pretty obvious. When a global leader like Roche is ready to enter a partnership, it means the technology has passed serious scientific scrutiny. It works and it's relevant. That creates enormous credibility with clinics, regulators, and investors. It's a massive validation milestone for Exploris. And of course, Roche's global scale and market access are a huge advantage. They can easily integrate tests into labs worldwide, open distribution channels, and accelerate clinical studies. All things that are usually very hard for a young medtech company. But yes, there are also clear risks. The first is dependency. Once you rely on a large partner, if Roche ever changes priorities, Exploris could find itself exposed overnight. The second risk is power imbalance. Roche will naturally have leverage in any future acquisition discussions. That could be great for founders in terms of exit, but not necessarily for early investors. And perhaps the most important point, in AI-driven healthcare, control over data and IP is everything. Whoever owns the data ultimately controls the value creation. So startups must ensure they never give that away too early.
Exactly. For me, this is a great example of how medtech, AI, and pharma expertise are converging. Let's see how that partnership develops, especially around regulatory approvals and international expansion. Speaking of innovation, Guy, you know that feeling when you receive a pitch deck and have to decide in minutes whether there's potential or not. TechCrunch recently featured a new game called YC Partner Simulator. It's part of a platform called YC Arena, and it basically lets you play the role of a Y Combinator partner. You watch real pitch videos and decide whether to accept or reject startups under time pressure, just like in real life. The goal is to teach players what it's like to think like a YC partner, with all the uncertainty, bias, and decision stress that comes with it. What do you think, Guy? Can a game like that actually teach useful lessons? And how close is it to real VC decision making?
I checked it out, actually. It's surprisingly educational, especially for new founders or people curious about how VC decisions are made. It highlights how subjectivity influences investment calls, things like storytelling, founder presence, timing, even the emotional context can sway decisions. It also shows how little time investors really have to form an opinion, which is why clarity beats complexity in a pitch. And maybe the most valuable part, it raises awareness of false negatives. The startups you reject that later become unicorns. In venture capital, missing a 100x deal is often worse than backing a zero. So yeah, for beginners, it's a great thought exercise.
That's true. We should definitely come back to that topic in a future episode.
Yeah, but let's keep it in perspective. It's a fun learning tool, not an investment simulator.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the third story. And this one's massive. OpenAI has reshuffled its already complex ownership structure after a new funding round and several multi-billion dollar deals with NVIDIA and AMD. The company is now reportedly valued at around $500 billion, making it the most valuable private company in the world. Its goal? To invest $1 trillion in computing power over the next few years to train the next generation of AI models. At the same time, OpenAI is preparing to transition from its current nonprofit setup to a for-profit corporation, a necessary step before an eventual IPO. In the new structure, Microsoft, the nonprofit foundation, and employees will each hold roughly 30%. The rest is owned by investors like SoftBank, Thrive Capital, Kozla Ventures, and the former shareholders of Jony Ive's hardware startup IO, which OpenAI acquired earlier this year. It's a bit of a Silicon Valley thriller, a mission-driven nonprofit turning into perhaps the most powerful AI company on Earth. What do you think are the biggest tensions here between mission control and investor returns?
Yeah, it's fascinating. You could say this is where two worlds collide. OpenAI started as a nonprofit with the mission to make sure AI benefits humanity. Now it's operating in a structure where some of the world's largest investors, Microsoft, SoftBank, Thrive, all have enormous financial stakes in its success. The tension is exactly there. How do you protect the original mission when billions are at play? The new setup, where the foundation keeps only limited nomination rights for board seats, is clever legally but weak from a governance standpoint. Critics argue it effectively dilutes the ethical oversight. But realistically, if you're planning to deploy $1 trillion, you simply can't do that with philanthropic capital. That means market money, and that means shareholder pressure. It's a cultural transformation from a nonprofit lab to a $1 trillion AI enterprise.
Right, and the NZZ had a great visual last week showing the entire web of connections. Microsoft, NVIDIA, SoftBank, Oracle, Broadcom. It really struck me how tightly interlinked everything has become. If one domino falls, the ripple effect would be global. Microsoft now owns nearly 30%, NVIDIA is entering, SoftBank plans to invest $30 billion. It's turning into a geopolitical power play. What does that say about the new balance of power in the AI industry?
It's a sign that we're now fully inside an AI industrial complex. OpenAI is no longer a startup. It's becoming infrastructure, like an energy grid or a telecom backbone, with NVIDIA, AMD, SoftBank, Oracle, and Broadcom all involved. What's forming is a private oligopoly of global AI infrastructure, chips, data centers, models, and distribution, all tightly connected. Regulators haven't even caught up yet. And the symbolism is interesting. If OpenAI goes public one day, that might be the moment when the open in OpenAI disappears for good.
Exactly. We'll see how much idealism survives after that $1 trillion round.
If you want to scale your startup fast and sustainably, check out the Upscaler program, a 2-year growth initiative connecting founders with experienced entrepreneurs, experts, and investors. Over 50 startups have already benefited from more than 500 tailored workshops. Learn more at www.upscaler.ch.
Let's move to today's main topic. We're continuing our mini-series about the Upscaler program with Peter Staley. In episodes 54 and 58, we already covered parts 1 and 2 of this series. The Upscaler program is an intensive 2-year growth initiative that supports startups through their next major scaling milestones. Unlike traditional coaching formats, Upscaler brings in experienced entrepreneurs who don't just give advice but actively work alongside the founders on key growth factors. The expert teams are tailored to each startup adapting dynamically to their current challenges, and they bring not only expertise, but also personal networks that open doors to investors, partners, and customers. In the first two episodes, we already got some insights from Peter about how the program works and how startups collaborate with the experts. Today, we want to go one step further and talk about success stories from the Upscaler program. Great to have you back in the Burn Rate studio, Peter.
Thanks very much. Hello, everyone.
Let's dive right in. Peter, when you think back on the Upscaler cohort so far, which two companies would you highlight as particularly strong success stories, and why these two?
That's a tough one, because choosing just two out of 50 scale-ups isn't easy. But maybe I'll mention two cases that were both complex and especially interesting. First, there's the medtech company Bonebridge. They manufacture implants, a highly competitive global market dominated by major players. Bonebridge managed to drastically reduce the complexity of their implants, which had a major positive impact on costs. When they joined Upscaler, they were preparing to expand into the US and Australian markets, which made it a particularly challenging and exciting phase. The second company is in food tech, KX, which produces a sports drink enriched with cortisol. It's designed to reduce stress and speed up recovery. They've been in the press recently. The well-known Swiss ski champion Lara Gut is both an investor and an advisor. This drink is also aimed at global markets, especially the US. Why the US? Because the regulatory framework there is much more open. You can actually make health-related claims in your marketing, which is very limited in Switzerland. Of course, it's an ultra-competitive space, and distribution is always a challenge in food and beverage. To give an example, in Switzerland, 85% of distribution is controlled by Migros, Coop, and Valora. That concentration makes market access extremely difficult.
Very interesting. You mentioned KX. Let's use that as an example for the next few questions. What exactly do they do, and at what stage were they when they joined the program?
It's actually a fun story. I met Pedro, the CEO of KX in San Francisco, at an innovation platform called MISTA, which focuses on food and beverage innovation. Global players like Givaudan, Danone, and Bühler are partners there. Since I sit on Bühler's innovation board in Uswil, I was on site, and so was Pedro. Two Swiss guys meeting for the first time in San Francisco, that's how it started. We realized quickly that the Upscaler program would be a perfect fit for the stage KX was in, just as they were entering the US market. Originally, KX had positioned itself as a hangover drink, but over time they repositioned it into a sports recovery beverage. What's really fascinating is how the product design and formulation evolved during that process.
I remember that. When they first launched as a hangover cure, claiming to eliminate hangovers completely, it made quite a splash. What were the biggest challenges at the time? Scaling the business model, distribution, the team, financing. What was the main focus?
Initially, they sold the product in powder form. Later, they developed a bottled version, which brought major implications for distribution and point of sale visibility. The question was, how do you stand out on a shelf? How do you present yourself to consumers? The new solution is quite clever. The powder is stored in the cap and can be mixed instantly right before drinking. This keeps the active ingredients fresh instead of degrading over time in liquid form. The second advantage, if your secret sauce is in the cap, you don't need to ship heavy water across continents. You can bottle locally, which drastically cuts logistics costs. Those were the two main dimensions of innovation, product and distribution. Then the next big question was, how do you enter the US market? Do you go through retail sampling, fitness centers? Which regions first? That was a major strategic topic we worked on. We were guided by a quote from Andy Grove of Intel, who once said, "You have to be 10 times better than alternatives if you want to enter a new market."
What were the decisive levers during the program that ultimately helped unlock growth?
Well, I wouldn't claim that the Upscaler program single-handedly moves every decisive lever. We contribute to it. The KX team itself are true doers and risk takers. They're driven, hands-on, and excellent marketers. That's the essence of success. The fact that their investors kept believing in them, even after setbacks, was equally important. What we could contribute was experience-based expertise. We brought in entrepreneurs who had previously launched beverages internationally, people who knew what works and what doesn't. That saved time and money. We also brought in experts who had helped other Swiss consumer brands enter the US market. Another key discussion was around athlete involvement, using professional athletes not just as promoters, but as investors and brand ambassadors. We had good reference cases in that area from my own experience with Mineralquelle Adelboden, where we built similar partnerships with athletes like Roman Josi, Jan Sommer, and Stan Wawrinka. Those exchanges of experience were invaluable.
And what role did investor and corporate connections play in the process?
We can often act as door openers to investors, corporates, or internationally active small and medium enterprises. For investors, the main value is trust. We're not deal makers, but if we're convinced by a company and make the right introductions, it helps create credibility. On the corporate side, it depends. Some can support through supply chains because they already operate globally. Others can help with distribution or act as strategic investors if there's a product fit. In KX's case, that wasn't the primary path, but across the 50 scale-ups we've supported so far, these connections have often generated real value.
And when the companies graduate from the program, how do you stay connected? Do you track progress through certain key performance indicators or milestones? Any figures or examples you can share, maybe from KX or another startup?
KPIs are my favorite challenge because trying to reduce entrepreneurship to two or three metrics is never easy, but I understand the need for measurable outcomes, and we do track them. Over 5 years and 50 cases, the Upscaler portfolio has created around 500 jobs and raised roughly 250 to 300 million Swiss francs in capital. But those aren't the numbers we care most about. What matters to us is real, sustainable growth. About 50% of the companies in our program doubled their revenues during the two-year period and did so sustainably. Capital raised is just a snapshot. What we're after is long-term progress. Often, the biggest value comes from business model optimization, helping teams shorten timelines, save capital, and reduce dilution. That's where we really create impact, and it's why the program has earned strong credibility in the ecosystem.
Final question, Peter. After 50 cases, what was your biggest personal lesson learned? Something you now tell every new team entering the program.
I keep learning from every single case. That's what makes this work so rewarding. But one message I always give founders is, scale-ups need the best possible team. Scaling a startup is one of the toughest challenges there is. It's far harder than innovating inside an established SME. You're building everything from scratch, entering new markets, facing constant change. You need top performers. And that's often underestimated. Teams are frequently built around friends, classmates, or people who are simply available and inexpensive. My advice, invest in top talent. It pays off every single time. A high-performing team saves you time, money, and pain. Every team member must score high on both skill and will. And once you start expanding internationally, focus becomes everything. It's like preparing for a high-altitude expedition. Many founders treat internationalization as if it were a weekend trip, but it's a jungle. You need planning, discipline, and focus to succeed.
Super insightful. Thanks, Peter, for sharing those success stories and deep insights. They show exactly why ambitious scale-ups should apply for the Upscaler program. We're already looking forward to the season finale of our mini-series in January 2026.
Our listener question today comes from Sven in Laestal, near Basel. He writes, I run a scale-up. We're generating solid revenue, but I want to keep growing. My investors, however, are pushing me toward profitability because of the tough fundraising environment. How can I convince my board that focusing on growth still makes sense? A real classic. What's your take? What's the most common mistake founders make when talking to investors about growth versus profitability?
That's the conversation every founder eventually has with their board. And the biggest mistake I see is that they argue emotionally instead of analytically. Founders come in saying, we have to go full speed now or we're dead. The competition will overtake us. And while that energy is understandable, what the board hears is risk and uncertainty. At board level, people want fact-based decisions. So Sven, if you want to convince them, you need to detach the discussion from emotion and make it about cause and effect. In other words, if we invest X, we'll grow by Y, which leads to Z, new markets, better unit economics, and ultimately higher profitability. Show concretely how long-term growth drives value. Vision is great for investor decks, but in a boardroom, data wins. Maybe take an example. Say you want to invest 2 million francs in customer acquisition. You show how that would bring 3,000 new customers, each with an 18-month lifetime, improving your retention and payback. Then detail the logic, your CAC assumptions, how you'll build the team, the cost of acquisition, activation timeline, and conversion rates. When you walk in with that level of clarity, it's no longer a hope pitch. It's a business case. And when the upside clearly outweighs the risk, boards will almost always support a controlled growth strategy over short-term profit optimization.
Got it. So what's the smartest way to pitch that without sounding overconfident or unrealistic?
You need to reframe the conversation. Don't say, I want to grow and it's going to cost millions. Say instead, I want to create long-term value and I see the opportunity to do that through targeted growth. Then make it clear that you could reach profitability in 6 months if you had to. Show that the path back to break even always exists, that growth is a strategic choice, not a desperate one. Prove that you understand your numbers. Bring your financial model. Show that your CAC is stable, your LTV is strong, maybe even that your net retention rate, NRR, is positive. Walk your board through every assumption. When you can answer every question with confidence and data, you show that you're in control. That's what earns trust. What scares investors most is when a founder looks like they're panicking, betting everything on growth because they're afraid of losing control. We saw that a lot in 2021 and 2022 when profitability didn't matter. Now, the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction. The founders who can combine discipline with ambition, who show they can grow but with control, are the ones who win board support today. So, Sven, here's a practical framework I'd recommend. Step one. Show that you could be profitable within 6 months if you wanted to. That gives everyone confidence. Step two, explain clearly why you're deliberately choosing growth instead. Step three, quantify how much shareholder value you'll create by doing so. Present both scenarios side by side. Max, you're an investor yourself. How do you tell whether a founder can actually scale or just thinks they can?
You can usually tell in the first 5 minutes. When someone says, we'll just double our marketing budget and double revenue, that's an immediate red flag. But when a founder says, we can grow efficiently up to 50,000 a month, and to test that, we're trying two new acquisition channels, that's someone who understands causality, not just correlation. Real scalability shows in a founder who knows their limits as well as their potential. Many talk only about the vision. The best ones know exactly where the system starts to strain, and they already have the fire extinguisher ready when it does. That's what investors listen for. Not everything's possible, but I know what works, what breaks, and how to fix it.
Last question, Max. If you were in Sven's position today, would you push for growth or profitability, and how would you pitch it to your board?
Without knowing his exact case, I'd present it like this. First, show the profit scenario. If we want, we can be break-even in 6 months. In that scenario, we grow maybe 20% per year, sustainably. Then show the growth scenario. We invest now, capture market share, defend against competitors like insert names, and we know our ROI timeline, when we return to profit. Then compare both scenarios side by side over a multi-year horizon. The key message should be, we're not investing because we have to. We're investing because it makes sense. Controlled growth. That narrative is powerful in 2025. The founders who demonstrate that they understand their machine, when to accelerate, when to ease off, will earn investor trust. Boards will back them because they see not just ambition, but control.
Exactly. It's not growth versus profit. It's growth under control. Thanks, Max, and thanks, Sven, for the great question. Definitely one of the most relevant topics right now.
And if you have a question you'd like us to discuss, write to us on burnrate.ch or on LinkedIn. Maybe we'll feature it next week. Now let's move on to the deals of the week. This week, we're back to a normal rhythm with several interesting rounds to cover. Let's start with a major update from the Swiss agritech sector. EcoRobotics has raised $105 million in a Series D round. Combined with their €45 million Series C last year, that's $150 million raised across their last two rounds. The round was led by Highland Europe, with new investors, European Circular Bioeconomy Fund and McGuinn Capital Partners, alongside longtime backers Swisscom Ventures, BASF Venture Capital and Yara Growth Ventures.
EcoRobotics has long been a global leader in AI-powered ultra-precision spraying, using computer vision to treat crops individually. Their technology identifies every single plant in the field and applies herbicides or pesticides with centimeter precision. That reduces pesticide use by up to 95%, lowers costs, and protects soil and ecosystems, all without losing effectiveness.
Their flagship product, ARA, is now deployed in more than 20 countries, using over 25 crop-specific algorithms to detect and treat different weeds and plant types. It's a real game changer for sustainable agriculture. CEO Dominique Maigret, formerly head of Swisscom Ventures, said the new capital will accelerate innovation, expand to new crop types and markets, and drive further algorithm development.
Exactly. They're also planning to launch a new product by the end of the year that could set a global benchmark for crop protection. EcoRobotics is no longer an experiment. It's a scalable technology company combining Swiss precision, global capital, and AI innovation to redefine the future of farming. I'm excited to see where they go next.
Next up, let's head to Basel. Sound Dream, a startup specializing in AI-based voice analysis for infants, has raised 4 million euros in a seed round. The round was led by CRB HealthTech with participation from Verge HealthTech Fund, Teku Ventures, Mission Gate Granatus Tech Fund, House of Innotech Switzerland, and Segways Ventures. The capital will be used to expand the team, accelerate international rollout, and further develop their product.
I find SoundDream's work incredibly fascinating, especially as a new father myself. The startup uses artificial intelligence to decode baby sounds. The technology analyzes cries and vocalizations to interpret what the baby needs, whether it's hunger, pain, or discomfort, with remarkable precision. They're now training their models to detect early signs of health issues, which could make the system even more powerful over time.
That's it for this week's Burn Rate the VC Insider podcast. If you'd like to support us, subscribe to our newsletter and share it within your network. Thanks for tuning in. We wish you a great weekend. Take care and bye for now.